Hallo, liebe Podcast-Freunde. Hier ist Dominik, euer Podcast-Host. Bevor es losgeht mit der nächsten Folge Sales & Pepper, möchte ich euch noch auf die neue Masterclass Academy von SDRs of Germany aufmerksam machen. Die Masterclass Academy bietet Vertrieblern aus Deutschland die Möglichkeit, sich weiterzubilden und hat die Besten der Besten zusammengetrommelt, um euch alles über Social Selling, Leadership und sonstige Sales-Themen beizubringen. Schau einfach in den Shownotes, melde dich an in der Community und bekomm 10% Discount auf die Masterclass über Sales & Pepper. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit der nächsten Folge von Sales & Pepper Interviews.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Sales & Pepper Interviews. And I'm really happy that we have a new guest here, and this time an English episode, because normally we do it in German, but today we will have someone English speaking, and I'm really happy about it. Welcome Angeli Mullins from Resourcify. Hi.
Hi, Dominic. Really nice to be here.
And for those people, Angeli, who don't know you, maybe you give a quick introduction about who you are, what you're doing at Resourcify, and maybe one or two words about how we got to know each other.
Sure. So hello to all the listeners. I'm Angeli. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer at Resourcify. We are a waste management and recycling company. We focus on sustainability and circularity, which is really nice to be able to say that our business is making an impact. I lead marketing, sales, customer support, RevOps, etc., and also one of our biggest business units at the company. And wow, how did we get to know each other? I think, Dominic, it's, you know, how many degrees of separation, really between people and the network, especially in Germany. I think what we find is, you know, it's a very small world and everyone just knows everyone. So I think it's kind of like circling around, and then we finally got the introduction. So it's great to meet you. And of course, great to be here.
Yeah. And we met the first time at the Revenue Leadership Roundtable here in Berlin in person.
Yes.
It was really nice because we are doing this from the Artist Circus, like once a month, gathering all the revenue leaders. And we've met there the first time in person before we met on LinkedIn. So for those of you listeners today who would like to get to one of our next roundtables, just ping me and I will send you the information. But today it's not going to be about the roundtables. It's about you, Angeli. And that's why I would like to give a little bit more background on you. You just said, like, what I really like is the topic or the area you're working in with the whole waste management. But maybe for those who've never heard about a CCO role or this chief commercial officer, can you tell us a little bit more about what is your responsibility? What are you actually doing there at Resourcify?
Sure. So, I mean, in general, a chief commercial officer is responsible, of course, for all the commercial activities. So marketing, sales, customer success, RevOps, in the sales world that deals with pre-sales, sales, and after sales. It really means driving the revenue and driving the ARR forward. It means increasing the brand awareness, the awareness, increasing the market share. So it's an all-encompassing role. So unlike what I would say a traditional CRO, chief revenue officer, sometimes just deals with either just sales or pre-sales, after sales, et cetera, a chief commercial officer is much wider and more encompassing because you also have brand, you also have awareness, you also have go-to-market internationalization. So you really have to have a lot of experience in so many different disciplines to really drive the commercial arena forward.
Nice. And that would be actually my follow-up question, like, what's the difference for a CRO? But you already answered this one. Looking to you just spoke about experience. And I think looking at your LinkedIn profile, what's really really stunning to me is your background. I mean, you have worked for a lot of companies already. Can you give us a little bit of an intro about what companies you've worked for so far, and how did you become a CCO?
Wow. So I'm like, how much time do we have? for all the listeners, they can probably tell from my accent, I'm not from Germany. I'm actually from the States, from California. I started out in the States actually as an account executive working in finance. So you always kind of start in your beginning roles and work your way up. I did that for 8.5 years doing sales and sales management, and then moved formally into tech. leading the marketing and go-to-market for a group called Amazon Global, Amazon headquarters in Seattle. It's their international expansion group. So for all the listeners who buy from Amazon across the world, you can think of us there. Then Intuit helping to roll out a B2B accounting platform called QuickBooks. So did a lot of the go-to-market work there. Then GoDaddy working in marketing. So did a lot of conversion. Then also internationalization. Then also working with the teams to help roll out their website building program. We also did a huge amount of country rollouts there. And then the company also IPO'd when I was there. So that was also very exciting. Then Australia decided to go to a different country and, you know, help a particular scale up move from a Series B to a Series C and then to Germany. So I started with a company called Latana, which was a Series A at the time, scaled it from a Series A to a Series B. And we were very lucky. We were able to raise our $36 million cash into equity round in, I think it was July of 2022. So right before the markets and all the cash from investors, you know, dried up. And then I was asked by my current CEO and also co-founder at Resourcify if I would join Resourcify as their current chief commercial officer. And, you know, can you scale another company? Can you do it again? So here I am.
Yeah. And I think what's really interesting about this whole topic is that you started like around about a year ago. So it's actually right before the economic downturn started, right? Before the money was throwing at startups and everyone was getting new funding rounds. But now you started your new role in a very tough time. So what would be quite insightful is, I mean, first of all, the years before for you probably also have been quite nice in case of a growth journey. But is there, do you see any difference, like maybe the first question, do you see any difference for in your role when you look at the current market situation?
Yes, 100%. So what I would say, and for all the listeners, you know, the past 3 to 5 years was all about hypergrowth. And especially for VC-backed firms, the numbers had to be through the roof and it had to be over 100% plus year-over-year growth. Now we are in, I would say, not necessarily a slowdown, but a really restructuring and repositioning of how we look at growth and what we think about. Everybody, I'm sure, has heard kind of that tried and true phrase of repeatable and predictable sales. So investors now are looking for maybe less hyper growth, but that repeatable revenue engine. So it really makes a difference in how you structure teams, how you look at your growth engines, how you look at your go-to-market, and really kind of how you look at the strategy of your business in general. So quite different, I would say, even in the past year and past 2 years.
And is there anything specific you would say, like if you look at Resourcify in the last year, is there any specific things you've implemented where you would say this had an impact on our success at Resourcify? Looking so like also to the current market conditions?
So to do with these market conditions, every business is different. At Resourcify, we focus on enterprise clients because we're dealing with clients that have a lot of waste. And we actually have our own internal metric. It's very nice. It's called waste under management. So that's, we'll say that's our own internal metric. But we're looking at companies that really produce a lot of waste because we have a very tangible business model. And so for all the listeners, just think about all the waste that you throw away every single day. And one of the things I learned when I joined Resourcify was 70% of waste in all of Europe is actually produced by companies. I couldn't believe it. Wow. So when we looked at our go-to-market and our business model, we're like, okay, how do we tackle this? And we actually created a digital layer that connects companies and their recyclers to help digitize their waste operations. So that's really the core piece of it. We also have a white labeling service. And then we also have something really cool, which is our circularity programs and our take back programs. So when you look at our go-to-market, it's about diversification of our product offering, but it's also about making sure that we have something that's very tangible. And it's the difference between having a software that is a nice to have with nice to have features and having a software that is a must have and really trying to nail that product market fit. So these are the differences in today's economy and today's market forces versus, I would say, you know, 2 to 5 years ago.
And like, I mean, what is super interesting, I think, is like when we look at your team now, I mean, maybe when you can give us a little bit of insight of how your team is structured, because you said you're doing the enterprise sales. So do you work with SDRs? Do you have like customer success team? Like, how is your team structured? First question.
Yes. So yes, we work with SDRs, and I'll put in the plug. So anyone that's an SDR that's looking for a role, we're actually hiring SDRs right now, bilingual, German and English, I would say. But we have basically pre-sales, sales, and after sales. So that's really in the specific revenue roles. So we do have SDRs that are doing outreach and outsourcing specifically in Germany. We're about to launch some new markets next year. So you guys will hear some more from us next year as well. We do have, and we're actually hiring for solutions engineers to help, especially in an enterprise sales motion. You're talking to many different stakeholders. So a lot of times, as you know, you have your champion that's a, more of a mid-level person, a user of the actual product and service, and we're making sure that we actually target the decision makers as well. So a lot of times you have technical, especially with what we're doing right now, you need a technical stakeholder to really break down integrations, data transfer, the technicality of the product. And then, of course, we have our AEs that are closing the deals. And then after that, we have our CSMs and our AMs that are focused on onboarding, making sure we have time to value in our product, and then, of course, upselling and cross-selling.
And if you now think about the changes you just described, right, like the economic downturn we have right now, is there anything you would have done differently like 2 years ago when you look at your team setup? Is it like, would it be one-to-one the same setup, or is it something different now?
Before we spent, and this was actually at my previous company, we spent a huge amount of money on an inbound marketing funnel, which absolutely makes sense. It really depends on the use case between an SMB motion and an enterprise motion. In an enterprise motion, it's more of a balance. So it's balanced inbound and outbound. Our AEs are also doing outbound prospecting in addition to our SDRs. So we're really making sure that we're getting to the right decision makers at the right time. And in an enterprise sales motion, it's many decision makers. In some cases, because of what we're specifically selling at Resourcify, it can also be combined with what's called ESG programs and sustainability programs. So sometimes even board members are involved because they're the ones making decisions. One of our clients, for example, is Johnson & Johnson, a huge multinational corporate. And so a company like this, at the board level, they're going to say, hey, we want to implement sustainability programs, ESG programs. And so we really have to target many different layers of an organization to make sure that we can prove the value of our product, and we're making sure we're getting the right decision maker at the right time. So I would say very, very focused type of outreach. The other difference is smaller and more nimble teams. And especially in sales motions, what we saw 2 to 5 years ago is when we tried to look at scaling, revenue leaders would just throw AEs at the problem. And they would come out with these spreadsheets of, okay, what's the revenue target? How many AEs do you need? And they just talk about scaling. Yeah, you know exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. How many AEs that they would need. And this was the tried and true. And you would get what we would call these traditional CROs or, you know, chief revenue officers. And that's the only thing that they knew how to do. And so now the market is different. And what we're looking at now is smaller and more nimble revenue teams. And it's about how many deals per AE can you scale? And this, of course, takes a village. It's not just one person doing it, but you have a holistic motion and you try to scale the amount of deals per AE, not necessarily huge overloading of AEs in your team.
Yeah. And I think what's also changed a lot, like I'm talking a lot to revenue leaders at the moment, and what they tell me is that it's not only about having the team, but also like maintaining it, right? So it's like, especially because numbers are going down in many companies, that people are not really happy. And that's why you need strategies to actually, first of all, to train them at the new conditions, but also to give them a value why they should keep working for your company. Is there anything you can recommend, like how to keep the team happy? Like, what's your strategy there to make sure that people feel valued at work and stick to what you're doing?
You know, it's really interesting because I find that people that actually want to take on more responsibilities feel more valued. And this kind of goes hand in hand to your last question. when we talk about overloading the stack with many AEs, then you get into AEs that are assigned by territory or vertical. And they, you know, they, if one vertical collapses or one territory is not doing well, then they feel like they don't have any impact or they can't progress. When you have small and nimble teams, it's easier for your AEs, your SDRs, whoever is in your revenue organization to have a more wide end-to-end impact so that they can maneuver markets, maneuver verticals, however, you know, territories are defined or if they're not defined at all. So that's one way. The other way is setting clear expectations from the top down about what goals the company is trying to achieve and how everybody's specific work goes to making that impact. It can always be said that it's easier in a sales motion because you're, you know, contributing ARR, but let's say you're trying to enter into a new market or you're testing out a new product. You still need people in the revenue organization to help you do that. And all of these things make an impact. So what I would say to, if there's any CEOs or founders listening, I would say, don't over-index on drinks in the office and the beanie bags and the foosball tables and all of that. That's not real value. Look at who's working for you and the skill sets that they have and really try to focus on their strengths and try to broaden, you know, the impact that they have in the work that they're doing. I think that really gives people more satisfaction in their work than the traditional, I would say, techie perks.
Yeah. And I think also what I've seen at Pleo a lot is what people valued a lot was the whole benefit solution in case of learning development budgets, for example, right? So if I want to, what you just described, if I want to get better and I want to invest my career, it's really good to have a budget available that people can actually use for training and development stuff so that they can get better in what they do. And it, also the company benefits from it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And what I think is also quite interesting is the whole KPI section, because you mentioned in the beginning that you're not only responsible for the commercial part, but also for customer success, for example. And one of the topics we discussed at one of our roundtables was how to make sure that people work hand in hand across departments, and especially SDRs hand over to AE, hand over to CS, right? To have as less friction as possible, but also to have KPIs that everyone's feeling responsible for and that actually benefits the company. Is there anything from your side that you implemented at Resourcify, would you say? What's the perfect setup there?
I don't know if how if I call it perfect. I think everything is kind of different
perfect?
For each company. One of the nice True. Things at Resourcify is we're actually moving into cross-functional business units. So this is very different, especially for an early stage company. They tend to be more vertical. When we have these business units, it's cross-functional teams working together, which literally means you have sales, marketing, CS, you have your SDRs, we have product and tech working together in cross-functional teams. So this kind of takes away that you have an SDR outreaching and the AE selling it, and they just hand it over to the CSM or the AM, you know, to do basically the onboarding and expansion, and nobody knows, you know, what each other's doing, and you have to dig through the CRM to, you know, look at notes. The other thing I would say is we're introducing a product metric into the commercial arena, and that's time to value. So time to value is basically a product metric. How fast does the customer realize that value? And there's different tiers of time to value. There's one that is just onboarding and it works. There's another one saying, okay, what's that value for that client? Or if you have a dashboard, let's say you have a SaaS dashboard, is the client printing off the insights and the data from the dashboard to use in their strategy meetings to make key business decisions? This is where your CSM and your AM are working together to really make sure, hey, not only has the client onboarded and they're happy, but now they actually really value the product. The reason that we're using this product metric in commercial is because it funnels all the way back down from the SDR reaching out and what is, you know, the buyer intent and why are we contacting them. That's when you start to introduce that value piece to when the account executive is selling it, then when it goes, you know, into after sales and they're moving it forward. So I think it's important to have cross-functional teams working together. And then also introduce, I would say, some non-traditional metrics into commercial. So start introducing some of those product metrics.
And is there any specific KPI you can recommend that, like a real life example, let's say, where you say, because normally what I know from SDRs, it's meeting booked or pipeline built. For the sales teams, of course, it's the ARR or MRR that is going to be measured. But or for the CS team, then it's NRR, for example. But is there any KPI you can tell us that is more a generic one for like this cross-functional team setup?
Wow. There's different ones on different levels. So I think if I go back to this time to value, it is an actual KPI that we measure. So there's the traditional ones. I mean, your ARR, you know, how long does it take, you know, as far as, you know, CAC payback. And there's a lot of these higher level metrics. But the reason I brought up this time to value is because it is a very traditional product KPI that is used. And by introducing it into the commercial teams, commercial now has to think about, hey, are we selling the right proposition? Are we contacting the right clients for the right things? Is the buying intent there? Does it match what we're selling? And so a lot of times what we see, especially in scale-ups, is people are selling everything and anything, right, to get ARR in. And then you have the after sales team saying, hey, what just happened? Can we deliver it? And then it kind of overflows into operations and other teams across the company. So that's why this very core product metric, time to value, is something by introducing it into commercial, it really gets the teams to think about who they're outreaching to, what that proposition is, how they're having those conversations, and to immediately get that value. And the really cool thing, Dominic, is after you get the client in and you prove time to value, then everything becomes sticky. And sticky is, I think, one of the best words that you can hear in a sales motion. It's usually heard in a product motion, but it's the best thing, I think, that you can hear in a sales motion.
Yeah. And I think also this is it relates to what I've heard from other leaders as well, that it's more about or going back more and more to have like a not a fragmented sales process, right? But some more and more to an more generic sales process where I would say that you have like the responsibility is not ending after the deal is closed one, but you will make sure that the what you just described, that the customers are actually using the product, right? And also like growing with the company.
Exactly.
I think one of the points I would also like to discuss with you today, Anjali, is something that I've also experienced in my past and my career, is that looking at sales roles, that in many companies, you don't have many females working in commercial roles, and especially not in leadership. I think what is really, really interesting in your background is that you're actually in the C-level now working in the commercial part. Maybe you can share a little bit of your own experience, like how is it for you, for yourself, and then also like what's your experience, like what would you say, is it more difficult, or what is it like to work as a female leader in the commercial?
It's a fantastic question. I would say a very meaty one, so we'll see how much time we have to do. Definitely. I've always been, it's interesting because once you are a female in an executive role, you really realize not only how important it is, but how much more work that we need to do, especially in executive roles and especially in the technology community. I've heard a lot of CEOs and founders say, we just can't find a woman, you know, who does this role or who's qualified. And I just don't think that's true. There are so many qualified women in so many different arenas, whether it's commercial, whether it's product, whether it's engineering, we can do it. So I would tell all the CEOs and founders who are listening, please make the effort. It is worth it. I just gave a speech at SaaStock in Dublin. It was all about branding. And there was one brand campaign that L'Oreal did, and it was actually interesting. They had different measures of lipstick, and then they actually did a little graph, and they said, hire more female leaders. It's worth it. Female leaders in the C-suite, you actually have 15% higher profitability, which is really great and a really nice metric for females in leadership. What I would say, being a woman, especially in revenue functions, because a lot of revenue functions tend to be dominated by men, is you sometimes have to really make your voice heard And for me, it's been nice in my career that I started in sales, then went to marketing, then did go to market, then did international expansion. So I've kind of moved through all of these different types, you know, of roles and departments, which makes me very well-rounded. I would also say in a commercial function, when you're dealing with something that's so wide and so broad, it's nice to have a background that is well-rounded as well. So for all the females out there, I would just say, make sure that your voice is heard, fight for your place at the table, make sure that, you know, the way that you're treated is fair. Make sure that when you go into roles, make sure you negotiate for fair pay, fair titles, et cetera. It would be, I think, disingenuous of me to say that the road has been easy, because it hasn't. There are a lot, I would say, of challenges along the way. What I always tell people is to continuously believe in yourself. You are the person that knows yourself best, and you are the person, only you can determine, you know, the limits of what you can do.
And talking about challenges, do you have like maybe one or two examples for us, like for those who have like maybe thought about going into the leadership area in as a woman, what kind of challenges they could expect, but also what kind of benefits they could have they maybe didn't think of?
I've had so many challenges over the years, you know, as a female leader at all different leadership levels. I've done interviews where people have confused me for the secretary and thought I wasn't the hiring manager. Oh, I've had situations where, you know, people have asked, you know, well, how tough are you really? You know, and they say, oh, you don't look so tough. And I'm like, okay, well, looks can be deceiving. If I was a man, would you ask that same question? I've had interviews where people have asked about your fertility plans. I've had all kinds of crazy things, you know, happen. And what I tell people is, all you can do is be that shining example of what it can be in future. So yes, one person's voice can change, you know, the world. I do believe in that, but you can't spend your time trying to change everyone else. All you can do is be the best version of yourself. Being in a leadership role, whether you're a woman or a man, requires you to go through so many different challenges, and you're going to be tested basically to the limits of, you know, your inner strength, your capacity, your work capacity, your mental capacity. You know, sometimes you would even doubt yourself, but I would tell everyone just to keep going and keep going for it, because it is worth it. The other part of your question is kind of what is the other side of that, and not the challenge, is once you get to a certain level and you can really turn around and help others. And so I also actually do a lot of mentorship of other women across Europe. And there's actually two different groups, Female Factor and Femme Palette, which are really fantastic. So take the opportunity to give back, take the opportunity to help others and to lift others up.
That's a really great advice. I really like this one, because that was also one of the reasons why I decided to go into leadership, because I wanted to help others. And I think that's it's a great reason to do it. I know that you are also in more communities, right? It's not only the mentorship what you're doing. You're also part of female communities. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more, Anjali, if I'm working in sales and as a woman, what kind of communities are they? Where can I learn more from other people maybe?
There's everywhere. So I would say, you know, I'm part of a community called Women of SaaS. It's a fantastic community across Europe. So Julia is the founder of it, fantastic woman. And we get people together really of all different functions. So it's not just for sales, but it's for everything, especially if you're in the SaaS community. Like I said before, if we have Female Factor, we have Femme Palette, which is another one. So there are tons of different communities, especially for women. If you don't have a community or you don't know, just reach out. So anyone listening, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm very happy to help and happy to help you network and introduce you to others.
That's really helpful. And I think also a great advice, like just reaching out to people, I think was also one of the things I did when I didn't have a plan what I was doing. I was just asking other people on LinkedIn. I think that therefore this network is so great, because you can just ask questions and people are normally, especially in sales and commercial roles, are really, really helpful and open and honest. And Anjali, now we're already coming quite to an end of the episode. And one of the last questions I always ask to my guests is, what is your personal advice for our listeners today? Like, what is the one thing that actually had a huge impact on your career? And it could be a book, it could be a framework, or just a hobby that you can share with our audience today that you would like to give to them?
It's a really great question, Dominic. And what I would say is, people always ask me about the books. What I will say is, in my mind, there is no specific book that's going to make or break your career. There are always books that come out every year, and there's new techniques and new ways of thinking. And by all means, you know, read those books. My favorite book is actually The Alchemist. It has nothing to do about business. It's all about life and one person's journey to basically find their inner self. And what I always tell people is inner strength. It's the one thing that they do not teach in business school, the one thing that you will need, especially if you're going to be going into leadership roles or you're in the technology scale-up community. Things are constantly changing. It's the inner strength that's going to pull you through. So the more that you work on yourself, the better leader that you become, and then the better it is that you're able to lead others.
And is there any specific app or something you can recommend if I want to Yes. work on myself?
Calm. Calm is my most favorite app. So for all the Headspace users, I'm sorry, but I really love Calm. A wonderful app. So you can do everything from meditation to yoga. It has different stories on there. It has, if you guys follow Jay Shetty, it has the Daily Shay, where you can get, you know, words of wisdom. So I would definitely, and I do not work for Calm, just so you know, but I definitely do recommend their app.
I will check it out for sure after our episode. But yeah, then there's nothing left to say. And instead of thank you for being my guest today, and hope to see you again at the Artist Circus on the 19th of April next year, Anjali.
You definitely will. Thanks again for having me, Dominic.
Have a nice day. Bye.
Schön, dass du heute wieder dabei warst. Danke dir für deine Zeit und wir freuen uns natürlich, wenn du uns ein Like da lässt oder den Podcast bei dir im Netzwerk teilst. Bis bald, dein Dominik.